Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Men Podcast. I'm Demi Wright, and if you haven't already, don't forget to check us out on Instagram at mem.cast for a weekly question of the week. This week, I have Dr. Innocent Monzewa, who's a rheumatology reg in the East Midlands. Hi, Innocent.
Hi, how are you, Demi?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you for joining us today. We're going to be talking about dermatomyositis. So I know it's one of the common PACES topics that may come because it's one of those things that have signs that we should be able to pick up if we're seeing it in an exam, but also maybe a patient might have it if we're seeing them in A&E. So Innocent, should we start? What is dermatomyositis?
Yeah, so dermatomyositis is an inflammatory myopathy which is characterized by muscle inflammation and cutaneous manifestations. It is an idiopathic process in the sense that we do not know what causes it and why some people get it. So it can present as an isolated form, or it can present in association with other connective tissue diseases such as SLE, or in association with malignancy in about 15% of cases.
Right, okay. And how often do you see it in your practice?
So dermatomyositis is rare. I think in literature it occurs approximately one per 100,000, but it can affect any age group. So you also tend to get another form of dermatomyositis called juvenile idiopathic dermatomyositis. Peak incidence is usually more in adults around the age of 40 to 50 years, and it's more common in females with a predominance of about 2 to 1.
Okay. And you mentioned initially about the types of classification. Do you want to just go into that a bit more in terms of how you classify it?
Yeah, so classification for dermatomyositis, it's more for research purposes, but in terms of the clinical presentation, we know that dermatomyositis is a homogeneous disease which can have different manifestations, but we sort of tend to put it into two groups, really. So we have got patients who present mainly with cutaneous manifestations with no other classic myopathic symptoms, in other sense saying there's no weakness. So in those with the classical picture where they've got the skin manifestations and the myopathic manifestations or weakness, then that's classified as classic dermatomyositis. And then you get another subset of patients who tend to have more of the characteristic skin findings, but in the absence of the muscle manifestations, and that can be classified as a myopathic dermatomyositis.
Right.
So a myopathic dermatomyositis in these patients, they either lack evidence of myositis on laboratory, radiologic, or on EMG studies, and they need to have absence of symptoms for at least 6 months, because sometimes these patients can present initially with just skin manifestations, but then over time, then they develop the myopathic features. So the patients with sort of clinically amyopathic dermatomyositis, they don't have myositis for at least 6 months from the time of onset of their skin manifestations.
Right. And so do these people, they will not ever develop myositis?
There's a group of patients with amyopathic dermatomyositis who never develop inflammation in the muscles. It's also sort of previously was termed dermatomyositis sign myositis because they don't have any evidence of ongoing inflammation within the muscles.
Okay, that's really interesting. So you did mention the typical presentation. So you mentioned that myositis. What's the typical skin presentations that they'll have?
Yeah, so the common skin presentations of dermatomyositis is usually a heliotrope rash, which is more of a violaceous to dusk erythematous rash, which is around the eyelids. This is rarely seen in other autoimmune connective tissue diseases. Then you also get the Gottrans papules, which are usually found around the knuckles or the metacarpophalangeal joints. These ones can also be raised and again be violaceous, and they're more of papules or plaques, those sort of the plaques that sometimes you tend to see in people with skin psoriasis, and they may be scaly in appearance as well. And you can get erythematous rashes on the face, which can also affect the neck and the anterior chest, which forms a V sign, or around the back and shoulders as well. So this rash is also called the Shawl sign. You can also get the skin manifestations, especially around the nail folds, especially in the nail beds around the hands. So with some periangle telangiectasias and also some hemorrhagic infarcts that you can see there. The rashes also tend to be quite photosensitive, so that's why the skin manifestations are more around the face and at the upper part of the neck. And you might also get calcinosis of the skin or muscles. This is called calcinosis cutis. The rash can also be quite itchy as well in some people. In other people, it's not as itchy.
Right. Okay. And so in terms of the myositis, is it just proximal muscle weakness that would clue you into?
Yeah. So the classic presentation is more of a proximal myopathy. So it tends to affect more of the upper arms and the proximal thighs as well. That's more in the early presentation, but late onset, you can also get a distal weakness as well. And in terms of the muscle involvement, any muscle could potentially get involved, and some people can present with involvement of the respiratory muscles, so with hypoventilation. Some people can also present with bulbar symptoms, so they tend to present with difficulties swallowing, and sometimes it can also affect the muscles of the neck such that they can have problems maintaining their head straight as well.
Okay. And is it typically progressive, the muscle weakness?
Yeah, so the muscle weakness tends to be progressive. So early onset, it's more of an insidious onset. Okay. So you tend to get weakness, which at the very onset may probably be not that severe. But if the disease remains untreated and there's ongoing inflammation, then over time, you tend to get worsening of the symptoms. The time from the presentation of the muscle involvement to the time they actually become weak can vary from one person to the other. But typically you want to see them before they progress to involve, especially like the bulbar muscles and so forth.
Right. Okay. And so when they do present, so let's say someone comes in and they've noticed that they're a bit weak and they've noticed the rash, how do you actually make the diagnosis of dermatomyositis?
So the diagnosis of dermatomyositis, it's a combination of things. So history forms one of the anchors of the diagnosis. So you need a good history, good clinical examination. You also need to exclude other mimics of dermatomyositis. This is where the skin manifestations of the dermatomyositis can be a bit confusing in other people as well. So, and then in terms of the workup, in terms of how you then sort of get to the bottom of it, initially, you need to do your basic investigations, including your full blood count, U's and E's, LFTs and CRP. And then you also need to check things like ANA, ENA, and double-stranded DNA. These are tests that we normally do in people with lupus, as the skin manifestations and dermatomyositis can sometimes overlap with the skin manifestations in people with lupus. And then you also need to check CK, which is a marker of inflammation in the muscles. And then we also do check some other autoantibodies, which we call autoimmune myositis screen. So in patients with myositis, sometimes they can have these antibodies, and some of the antibodies can actually have a prognostic significance as well. So the one that's quite significant in terms of causing high mortality is what's called MDA5 dermatomyositis. So these are patients who have got dermatomyositis, but when you do the blood test, you find that there's this antibody, and these patients, significant number of them tend to get interstitial lung disease as well, and that's quickly progressive and sometimes can be associated with high mortality within a period of less than a year, actually. And then in terms of how you wake them up, you also probably would need to do, like I said at the very onset, that 15% of patients with dermatomyositis may have an associated malignancy. So it's very important to exclude malignancy in these patients. And the severity of the malignancy does not always correlate to the severity of the dermatomyositis. So sometimes it could be early malignancy, sometimes it could be quite late. So we tend to do a CT, chest, abdomen, pelvis, ruling out any other form. Sometimes in women, they might need mammograms to look for breast cancer, for example, a good breast examination. And if there's suspicion of breast cancer, then proceed to do mammography as required. And lung function tests are also important. 30% of our patients tend to get lung involvement. So having basic lung function tests, and you may also need to do sort of other investigations such as MRI of the proximal muscles. The MRI basically helps you to pick up whether there's edema within those muscles, which sometimes could signify myositis. So those are sort of some of the initial investigations that we normally do before sort of coming up to make a diagnosis.
Right. Okay. So you mentioned the CK. Is there a value above which that you'd say, okay, yes, this is in keeping with dermatomyositis?
So the problem is CK is, like I said, we have got two classes of myositis. Some people have got what's called a myopathic dermatomyositis, where they've got the classic skin presentation, but with no myopathic involvement or very little myopathic involvement. So which means in those patients, CK may be mildly elevated, but then we also get the other group of patients where they've got florid myositis, where CK could be more than 50 times the upper limit of normal. So CK on its own may not be able to distinguish whether this patient has got dermatomyositis or not, but may be able to tell you the extent of the involvement of the muscles. So it's on its own, it probably wouldn't be diagnostic as such, but it gives you an idea of the extent of the muscle involvement, really.
Okay. And is there any role for skin or muscle biopsy?
In some patients where there's diagnostic uncertainty as to the diagnosis, like I said, the skin manifestations could sometimes overlap with other presentations as well, such as even in psoriasis. So in those patients, skin biopsy would be important as it will help you to sort of make the diagnosis. Biopsy would be one useful in excluding these other disorders that may resemble dermatomyositis. Seborrheic dermatitis could be one of them, contact dermatomyositis, atopic dermatomyositis, or lichen planus or psoriasis could be some other conditions that could actually mimic the rashes that you see in dermatomyositis. So it's not everyone who needs it, but where there's diagnostic uncertainty, it's useful. A biopsy of the muscles could also be useful if there's uncertainty about the myositis. If you are able to pick a florid myositis on an MRI scan and the history and other antibodies are in keeping, you don't necessarily need to proceed to do a biopsy. But where there is uncertainty about whether there is inflammation of the muscles, then a biopsy could be recommended. So EMG might be able to guide you as to target the areas where you might also need to biopsy as well.
Right. Okay. And then you also mentioned they're at risk for malignancy. Is it any type of malignancy or is it breast cancer?
So any malignancy could be associated with dermatomyositis. The commonest being ovarian cancers, nasopharyngeal cancers, lung malignancies, but any cancer really could be associated with dermatomyositis.
Okay. And so just to wrap up a bit, can you just tell me about your general approach to managing these patients?
So I think the most important thing at the very onset is to secure the diagnosis and, like I say, to exclude malignancy. Once you've confirmed that, I mean, this is dermatomyositis, then in terms of treatment, if it is mainly the skin manifestations of the disease, then dermatologist tends to help us to manage these patients as well, as some patients may benefit from topical steroids. If there's a lot of itchiness, like pruritus, then the use of oral sedating antihistamines might be sort of recommended. Things like amitriptyline or gabapentin sometimes may be able to help improve the pruritus as well. And if this is not helpful, sometimes they can use intravenous corticosteroids. Topical calcineurin inhibitors may also be used as well to treat skin manifestations as well, such as tacrolimus. In terms of disease-modifying treatment for the skin, hydroxychloroquine sometimes does help, and methotrexate could also be used as a steroid sparing to treat the skin manifestations. In terms of the muscle involvement, initially we tend to use high doses oral steroids, and then we also use that in combination conventional synthetic DMARDs such as methotrexate, MMF, and calcineurin inhibitors like tacrolimus or cyclosporin could also be used. Tacrolimus, there are some studies that it's more useful, especially in those refractory inflammatory myositis with IOD, which are kind of resistant to treatment. Biologics have also been used in treatment of myositis. So treatments such as rituximab, which is an anti-CD20, and abatacept have also been used in the treatment of myositis. Now we've got what are called Janus kinase inhibitors as well, which have been tried in patients with dermatomyositis with some success as well.
Okay. Well, that was extremely useful, Innocent. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Demi.
And if you haven't already, don't forget to follow us on Instagram for our weekly question of the week. And if you do have any special requests, please do get in touch with us. We'll see you next time.